That little speaker on your phone doesn't stand a chance. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 360. Sportsnet.ca/590. And Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, it's Brady and Walker. Welcome to it. You're watching on Sportsnet 360, listening online. Let's talk some heavy words out of the gate on this Wednesday. Commitment. Reciprocation. What do you need when you make a commitment to someone or something? Reciprocation. What do you commit to? How long do you commit for? Like, for example, Walker and I know we won't be doing a show here at 1 p.m. forever. Why? What have you heard? But there's short-term and there's long-term commitments. I married my wife 11 years ago. She's awesome. Best friend. Hilarious. I like kissing her. She laughs at Borat. She tolerates Britpop. She's great. I'm committed to her. Whatever she needs. Assuming she doesn't start collecting garden gnomes. Same thing with my kids. Two boys. No conditions. Committed for life. Don't marry a girl, though, who smokes, listens to country music, and thinks flip-flops are okay to go to the keg in. They're not. But I'm also committed to Henrik Lundqvist at home in Game 7s. Friday night. He's mine. I'm his. He isn't losing that hockey game. You know why I'm committed to him? He reciprocates. He always delivers. How rare is that in sports? There's not a shadow of a doubt in anyone's mind that Henrik Lundqvist and the Rangers are going to the Stanley Cup final now. And again, so rare. The Lightning, for example, don't think they're winning that game. And also, I should point out, they're right. They aren't winning that hockey game on Friday night.
Is Brady and Walker. Watch it on Sportsnet 360. Hear it on sportsnet.ca/590. And Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good afternoon. It is Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 360, and listening online, sportsnet590.ca.
Is that your favorite website? What's your
second favorite website?
No, it's not. All right, TMZ is your favorite.
Henrik Lundqvist does this. We're used to it. MSG, the New York Rangers, Lundqvist, elimination games. New York has turned into this entity that always wins that game. I think we fall into this trap sometimes, especially in a world of parity. And all sports are starting to be filled with parity, especially the National Hockey League. How can you sit there and have a definite opinion on one hockey game? Oh, I think the Rangers are going to win. Oh, I think the Lightning are going to win. In this case, you can. And it's the ultimate compliment to who you just talked about, Henrik Lundqvist. They win this game. They always win this game. Last night seemed to be Tampa's chance, and the third period fell apart. Who doesn't think the Rangers are going to do what they always do?
Like,
I'd love to argue with you, but I can't do it.
Their money line Friday night is putting up 100 and winning 69. That's an investment worth making. It's not even 100 for 50. It's not 100 for 40. They're not losing that hockey game on Friday night.
And it has nothing to do about of the quality of Tampa. That has nothing to do. They could be playing against, it feels like they could be playing against, you know, the 1976 Soviet team and win that game.
Like, do you think there's a lot of really good goalies? I think we're at a really good age for goalies, era for goalies, if you will. And most of them are younger. This isn't, at one point in time, it felt like all the best goalies were over 34 years old around 2003 or so, right? Hasek, Brodeur, Waugh, Belfour, Cujo. They all felt that way. Jose Theodore's Hart Trophy was sort of an outlier in 02. But now, do you think there are just a lot of great goalies, or do the rules, do everything make it tough to tell who the good goalies are? And still, at the end of the day, and he doesn't have a Stanley Cup, which tells you that rings aren't everything, man, is Henrik Lundqvist. Are there a lot of really great goalies, or is it just it fluctuates so much? We haven't had a repeat Hart Trophy winner since Tim Thomas. And that felt weird because he did it so late in his career. Two Vesnas in 3 years.
You know what? It depends on what you look at. I think you could talk to 10 different people and have 10 different opinions on what makes a great goalie. We'll ask Doug McClain this when he joins us in about 7-8 minutes from now. What makes a great goalie? And, I mean, for example, right? Some people would say Jonathan Quick. He's my guy. He's a winner. There's no one else you'd want. Didn't make playoffs this year, right? Tuukka Rask has been there before. Didn't make playoffs this year. Henrik Lundqvist would probably come up as the number one choice. He's never won a Stanley Cup. What about Pekka Rinne?
Pekka Rinne.
I think like that's a great example of pound for pound, technically speaking, as a physical specimen, that guy might be the best in the league.
He's never played in the conference finals. Can't get there.
So is it like a physical thing, or is your opinion of, listen, one game, game seven on home ice, who do you take? And in this case, it kind of has to be Henrik Lundqvist. The Rangers are 15-3 in their last 18 elimination games. One of those was the Alec Martinez cup-winning goal in overtime in L.A.
So is anything about last night, a 7-3 Rangers win? Derek Brassard had 5 points, and as you mentioned, we'll talk to Doug in a couple minutes about that. Game 7 is not tomorrow, but it's on Friday on CBC at 8 o'clock. Is it that they lost, or is there anything about how they lost so decisively, so devastatingly? Their home fans vacated that building. Like, we were at the Jays game, but I watched, I BVR'd it, and in the third period, when you're sitting there and it's, you know, the Rangers are going 5, 6, 7 goals, it's like 9,000 people left by the end. It's no drama. This isn't Chicago-Anaheim series. People just got on the expressway and went home. They ditched their team in the third period because it's 6-1, 7 minutes into the third.
Generally speaking, I kind of believe sometimes it's how you lose. In this case, it was just that they lost. They could have lost last night. The Tampa Bay Lightning in triple overtime, 10-1, 10-0. They lost 7-3, a game that it was 2-1 after 40. They lost, and now they got to go into Madison Square Garden game 7. They'll say the right things, and you know what? Steven Stamkos and Victor Hedman, they don't probably believe they're going to lose. Everything's gone right for those guys for a span.
But they had to feel that was their, I don't know, don't you feel that's your shot sometimes?
I feel that was their shot.
I know they'll never say it.
I feel that was their chance. Because how do you bet against the Rangers at home in Game 7? You can't do it.
And it's not just Lundqvist. They have never, their franchise has never lost a Game 7 at home. Go back, think about it. All the original six, you know, you're so familiar. There's only 5 other teams in the league and 4 make the playoffs, and they've still never lost a Game 7 on home ice in 100 years at Madison Square Garden.
They did this last year. They did it in round 2. Like, listen, I was really, really rooting for the Washington Capitals in that series. I wanted to see Alexander Ovechkin in the conference finals. I did. I admit it. But Game 7, no matter how tight that was, and then you get to overtime, Stepan eventually scores the game winner. But there was a sense of inevitability there. I always felt it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was that sense of inevitability. And now, I mean, look alone. I mean, it's. I'm trying to think of, this is an anniversary today of Game 6 in the 1993 Western Conference Finals with Toronto and L.A. It's a Thursday when that happens. They play the game on Saturday, and it's one of those rare times that a conference final has been won by the road team when L.A. went into Toronto and won. It's incredibly rare. We know we've seen Stanley Cups, obviously Boston the most recent, and Pittsburgh did it in Detroit in 2009. But they're just, I don't know how Tampa has any sense of confidence. And it's been a long run, and they dodged a tremendous bullet in Detroit, and they looked very, very good. They started to make people really believe, because I think we look back and maybe that series, even with the Habs, wasn't as close as we thought, given how they leaped out of the gate.
You know what I almost equate it to, this Rangers elimination run, and especially Game 7 at home? You remember, the 93 Habs won 10 overtime games in a row. And all the guys on that team talk about it in this way where they got to overtime, whether it was against, mm-hmm. you know, who did they play? The Islanders. They played, obviously the LA Kings in the final that year. Buffalo. All the teams they played, they'd get to overtime. They knew they were going to win.
Quebec.
They knew somebody was going to score. Might have been Guy Carbonneau, might have been Kirk Muller, might have been Stéphane Lebeau, whatever. They were going to score, John LeClair, and they were going to win. There was this sense of belief. I think the Rangers have gotten to that point. Like, I don't know what Tampa feels. Honestly, I don't know. I don't know how John Cooper reacts. I don't know what he says. I don't know what Ben Bishop's feeling. You know the Rangers are incredibly comfortable. They're not worried. They've been here before. They've done this before.
I mean, 4 teams won a Game 7 on the road last year in the playoffs. Tricky part is LA did it 3 times.
Right.
LA did it to the Sharks, the Ducks, and the Blackhawks in overtime in the conference final. The only other team to do it was Minnesota winning in Denver, because Colorado was the top seed. There's no history here for Tampa, but to go back to my original comment, there's tons of of history for Lundqvist, and he just doesn't. He does not lose these games.
He doesn't do it.
I'm trying
and
to
even
think,
in a series where he's given up six goals in a couple games.
Like, name me a sport where there's such a sure thing. Like, you even say, well, it's Tom Brady in the playoffs, or it's Aaron Rodgers. They can get out of the gate. But look how Aaron Rodgers' first half was against Seattle. Look at Tom Brady in the conference finals 2 years ago in Denver. Couldn't get anything going. Couldn't get anything going against the Broncos defense that year. But there's nothing so inevitable as Henrik Lundqvist in Game 7 at home. So we'll see what transpires. Don't forget, it's a Game 6 tonight in Chicago. It's funny how this, like, if these series even started slow, and I don't know that they did because you had that amazing triple overtime game last Tuesday night, now the drama's really on. And even having a dark night, if you will, tomorrow is going to leave some hockey fans wanting, and certainly wanting a Saturday night Game 7 between Anaheim and Chicago, which is when it would be.
So quick question, more convinced that Chicago does what Chicago does and force a Game 7 at home, or more convinced that the Rangers close it out in Game 7?
Well, more convinced of the Rangers, but I think I'm thinking both original six teams win, and Chicago is going to force a Game 7, and they'll truck onto those planes again and play Saturday night.
So before Doug McClain joins us, a couple of NHL news kind of breaking, I suppose, as our show gets underway. Peter DeBoer, as reported by Elliot Friedman, is going to be the next coach of the San Jose Sharks. And further to that, Dan Bylsma is reportedly in Buffalo today. Don't know how close that is, but Dan Bylsma could end up being the head coach of the Buffalo Sabres, which is, I suppose is not that surprising. You know Peter DeBoer pretty well. I know you're a believer in him. I know we kicked around potentially him landing even here in Toronto before Mike Babcock did. What's the challenge of going to San Jose and the direction or lack thereof that they're involved in?
Well, and two, it's the best. There's numerous challenges because I think Chicago's going to be fascinating. We've talked about their cap issues. It happens every year they win. It happens every year they go far. There's numbers to, you know, for Stan Bowman to pore over and decide who he can keep and who he can't, who he can trade and who he potentially can't. So from year one, where you got Bufflins and Versteegs and Andrew Ladds 3 years ago, we got David Boland and trying to think who else left in the summer of 13 after they won.
It certainly wasn't as much.
No, they didn't have to do quite as much to move people out.
Nick Leddy had to go.
But I'd look at this and say it's the most talent. Pete DeBoer's 46, so he started coaching in the NHL in his late 30s. That's kind of a, I wouldn't say it's a rarity, but it's an achievement, and he bypassed the AHL route. It's clearly the best talent he's ever started with. And that said, we're not pretty sure who's going to play goal. He got a couple years in Florida.
They don't have a goalie right now.
Right. He got a couple years in Florida and just didn't have the horses, even though the East was softer. And then he got to New Jersey. And don't you think, the Devils team that made the Cup Final in 12, like, find me a more
pedestrian.
One-off group totally. Where you go, I'm still not quite sure how they did it, but indeed they did do it, and you do have to give credit to coaching when they do it.
It seems the way to win sometimes is to have a couple of guys that can log tons of minutes in the blue line. New Jersey didn't even have a household name playing defense.
Great question is how they play now. They were suffocating defensively. The Devils were typically like Lemaire-esque, boring to watch. The Sharks haven't been under Todd McClellan. So what kind of style can he get San Jose to play? And we still wonder about the shakeup. Is there core? Thornton, Marlow, now Havlat, Pavelski, Couture, are they all, and on the blue line, obviously, you know, are all those guys rolling back? Havlat's not there anymore, but
no, Havlat is
ages. I'm looking at an old hockey DB.
Yes, you are. Doug McClain joins us, Hockey Central analyst.
It's news to us.
Interrupt Brady's San Jose Sharks roster. Roster talking here. Hey, is this an enviable job, Doug, for Peter DeBoer, this situation, or when you're out of work, is every market enviable?
Everyone is. How many times has Peter DeBoer made the playoffs in his career?
Just the one.
Interesting.
Is there a team, I'm going to ask, is there a team you think he should have made the playoffs with that he didn't, talent-wise?
Probably New Jersey. How many years was he there?
He finished three seasons, I believe. Yeah.
I would think you're going to be in the mix every year in Jersey, I would think, you know, but not now. So, yeah, what was he in Florida, 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, 2.5.
Yeah. So, anyway, I think San Jose's a good job. I mean, I still think they're a decent team, and they should have made the playoffs this year. they'll challenge for a playoff spot next year. But there's a bit of a transition going on there. And those are look, every job's a great job for a guy to get back, to get your foot back in the door. I don't care where it is. It's one of 30. But this is not an easy one. Wilson's hesitant to make big moves, and it's cost them.
It's amazing, though, when you, because I know San Jose is a punchline to a lot of people in terms of winning the big one, but all of a sudden you look at, you know, the roster and the talent. They still have Brent Burns, who was incredible at the Worlds. They still have Pavelski, who's scoring 35 a year, and Thomas Hertl looks like a good young player, and there's Thornton, and there's Marlowe. I mean, Logan Couture is still there. He's a building block. There's a lot of talent there still.
Yeah, and they got a pretty solid blue line even after Burns. So, you know, the question is, goaltending has been relatively inconsistent the last couple of years. What do they do to shore that up? Do they have somebody in-house, or do they have to make a move outside to bring somebody in to give them playoff-type goaltending? Niemi's won a cup, but there's just not been a lot of love for him. I don't like his style. It seemed every night I watched, he was letting in bad goals. So that's one big move they've got to make, and I just don't know who's out there that can solidify that position to give them playoff goaltending. But that's a team. Come on, that team should have made the playoffs this year.
Sure,
that
yeah.
team should not have lost out to Vancouver and Calgary and Winnipeg, in my opinion.
It's Doug McLean, our guest, of course. 8 o'clock start for Game 6 tonight, Anaheim-Chicago. Game 7 of Rangers and Tampa goes Friday night on CBC as well, both games on CBC. So if all the dominoes stop, Doug, and Dan Bylsma ends up in Buffalo, we all know Jeff Blashill will get promoted in Detroit. Are there names that are going to be left out of the mix that you say, I'm surprised they're out of the mix? There's an opportunity as an assistant, or do they just do what Bylsma just did and wait a year? Names like Boucher trying to get back in, Dallas Aikens, you know, does Kevin Dineen stay
Paul
an assistant?
McClain. Paul McLean.
Paul McLean, exactly.
You know, there's really some good people that are out there. Like, you know, my understanding was Boucher had agreed to a 5-year deal in Toronto and left here thinking he had the job. Contingent on whether Babcock came. Obviously, he knew that was part of the, you know, the moving target. So, yeah, it was a contingency offer, but he was that close to getting back in. So, you know, some good people out of jobs, which puts pressure on the guys that have jobs. That's the bottom line.
Doug McLean joins us. I want to ask you about Derek Brassard. He was tremendous last night. 3 goals, 2 assists. He was a +5 at 10 shots on goal. I remember when he was 6th overall, he gets drafted there in Columbus, and remember his rookie year, he has 25 points in 31 games, and he's going to be the center that Rick Nash never had. Then he runs into injury problems, and it's kind of an afterthought until he gets moved as part of the Gaborik deal, and this year, and specifically this playoffs, he has just broken out and been so impressive. Like, what do you see when you look at Brassard and where he stacks up as a centerman?
Well, I recall and watched scouting him in Drummondville and how fast he was. I mean, that was the strength of his game, was his speed and, you know, his puck movement. He looked like he had a chance to be a real top-end centerman if he grew. And, you know, I think he came into the NHL at probably 170 pounds and, you know, it took time. But that was one of the worst trades that'll go down when you consider he and Dorsett and Moore for Gaborik. Mm-hmm. And then they had to eat money on Gaborik to move him. So, but it's time. He's, what is he, 27 now? He's, you know, he's been a good player the last 2 or 3 years. I see him as being a really, really good number 2 centerman. That's what I see him as.
You would have been in boardrooms and on the phone a lot with Glenn Sather while being a GM. Glenn had some really rough years when he had all the money. He had a couple rough years, certainly coming into the salary cap era. He's a game away from going to back-to-back Stanley Cup finals. Awfully hard to do. Is he getting less credit? Should he get more? Has he regulated his cap management in a better manner? Or do you just look and say, well, he's got the damn goalie that we all would want? What is it?
No, I think you've got to give him a lot of credit. I mean, he made the Brassard trade. He's made the Nash trade. He made the McDonough trade. Those are three monumental trades. I don't like the Callahan St. Louis one as much, but the other three were outstanding trades. There's no doubt about that. There's some good trades made. There's some good drafts made. I mean, Lundqvist, what was he, a seventh-round pick?
Something like it, yeah.
You know, I mean, so he's gotten some guys a little later. They took Stahl, you know, in a good position. I mean, Brian Lee went ahead of Stahl. Brian Lee went to Ottawa at number 8, I believe, in that draft. And if I'm not mistaken, Stahl went either 12 or 15 in New York. That was a good draft for them. So I think it's a combination of trades and free agents and drafts. And he deserves credit for it. He's the boss.
What did you see from Tampa last night? I mean, we all kind of, because we know the history, Game 7 at MSG with Lundqvist. It's a game that New York doesn't lose. Did you see a team almost resigned to their fate once it gets to 4-1 in the third period?
Yeah, I think it was over at that particular time. And they've been a funny team in the playoffs. And when we saw it throughout the Detroit series, we've seen it throughout this series, where all three teams, Detroit, Tampa, and New York, have blown unbelievable opportunities to put these two series away. Detroit could have won that series.
Yeah.
Tampa obviously won it. New York had the chance to take a stranglehold, blew it at home with a funny performance at home, like a weird performance. Tampa last night lets it slip away where they're just, you know, I don't know. Is it experience? Is it goaltending? I mean, Bishop was just okay. You know, I haven't liked the way New York have played in a lot of this series, and yet they can, you know, they can finish it.
Hey, before you go, David Runblad's expected to check in for Kimmo Tiimonen tonight. Is too much being made of the big gap between the Hawks' top four and the next two guys? A lot of cup-winning teams love to rely on the top four. Do you just look, Doug, and say the overtimes, the kind of pressure Anaheim's best three lines are putting on them, sure they're going to sag a little bit because they're trotting out Keith and Seabrook, Jalmerson and Oduya so much.
I thought it was the key to the start of the series, and we talked about it in the pregame before game one, that if they could hammer a depleted back end. I mean, last game, Tiimonen's on the ice. Tiimonen's on for two, I believe. Kaminsky's on for one. I mean, there is a dramatic drop-off, but what has really jumped out at me since Christmas about Anaheim is how good their six are. Lindholm has been spectacular. Vatanen, who most people know, just listen to Boudreaux talk, nobody knew these guys. You know, well, they're that good. I think, if I'm not mistaken, they got 47 points in the playoffs at defense group. And they've been as good as Chicago's, which is hard to believe, guys.
Hey, we appreciate this. This was pleasant. This was great. We enjoyed our interaction today. You're in a great mood. This is almost all over, isn't it, really?
I'm not in a good mood.
Oh.
I'm putting up with it.
Okay. Well, and we don't call you early. We call you, you've eaten. You've had a couple meals digested already before.
Guys,
in the old days, we'd call you too early. I know that, you know.
I always enjoy going on with you. What happened to my buddy Tom Collins?
He's got ice.
I just learned his name, and he's gone.
I think he was in line to get the Sharks job. So maybe he was moving out to the Bay Area, and then Pete DeBoer swiped
That's
it from
great.
Him.
I'm happy for him.
Pete DeBoer or Tom Collins? Which one?
Both.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for this,
Thanks,
Doug. We appreciate
Thank
it. Doug, Call, Doug Collins.
Doug Collins.
From the NBA, with Jalen Rose and Sage Steele checking in one
we'll
way or
have
the other.
To get, we'll have to get Peter DeBoer on and really grill him about how he plans to use Marty Havlat, the key to...
You know what? That was 7 minutes ago, and I'm looking...
Oh, people don't forget.
I'm being multifaceted. Multifaceted.
Right. All right, so...
hey, I'm more than just a hockey guy. I don't care what you say.
Tristan Thompson, LeBron James, and the Cleveland Cavaliers are moving on to the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this. We talked about LeBron versus Michael Jordan and a little bit yesterday, and I was thinking about it last night, and it's really impressive. It is. This is the sixth straight finals for LeBron. Your thoughts on how the Cavaliers did it last night, like it was such a speed bump. And as it relates to the East, like I know there was at one point where, and I think you've held similar opinions on the Hawks and the Houston Rockets and kind of called them both frauds and phonies. And
yeah,
and
they're two of the last four teams playing.
Yeah. I mean, they're there.
Well,
but they're clearly teams 3 and 4.
I'm sure the Atlanta Hawks in game 4 of the third round reminded folks a little bit of the Toronto Raptors in game 4 in the first round,
right?
On the road.
Right.
Next thing you know, are you going to bring it or not? No, you're not. You're down 15 points early in the second quarter. And Cleveland came out strong in the second half and just made it a no doubter. They're up 17 at the half. And
I mean, it's a good season for Atlanta, though, isn't it?
It is a good season for Atlanta. If that season happens in Toronto, and Atlanta hasn't had that kind of season. They went to conference finals, I think, with Dominique Wilkins, and they got blown out by the Celtics in their prime, I want to say in 86 or so. So it's been 30 years almost of mediocre basketball, okay players, not a lot of star power. Joe Johnson was there, whoopty. But as their best player, I almost wonder if we've undersold. We'll talk more about Cleveland, the city, and what this means next week when the series is set. Golden State can wrap up Houston right tonight.
I'd like to I'd almost like to spend some time there and get a feeling of the feeling, you know?
How it feels, yeah. Have we undersold Cleveland's talent? Like, I'm trying to talk myself into, like, it's what LeBron's done has been amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
And no one feels like this wasn't a group that even came in preseason. And if you did, I just think you were misguided to compare the 14-15 Cavs to what the 10-11 Heat or what the 11-12 Heat were supposed to be. There is no, I mean, sorry. No one's ever going to mistake Kevin Love for Chris Bosh. And Kyrie's getting better, but without LeBron James for two straight years, mostly healthy, he couldn't get his team into the playoffs in a terrible conference. That's not to say he's not a good player, but right now he's a support guy. He might become one of the best point guards in the league, right? And it's a deep, we know this with Kyle Lowry when we talk about him, it's a deep, deep league for point guards. But I look at it and I go, Thompson, better than anybody thought. It's been an absolute coming out party the last half of the year and the playoffs. Mozgov's been really valuable for them. Really valuable presence. Shumpert's been a big ad, though he shot terribly last night. And off the bench, like we said, Dellavedova was a no-name right at the start of the season. And the guy we thought might play a role, Mike Miller, has no role. No role on this team whatsoever.
I think there is an element of luck to it because it's not like Cleveland. It's not like Cleveland was like thinking this is the plan, right? This was not the plan. Kevin Love was supposed to be playing. Deion Waiters was supposed to be playing. There was no Shumpert. There was no Mozgov, right? This wasn't the plan.
It wasn't the plan.
This is LeBron. You know, Smith wasn't the plan.
But I guess he's not carrying.
Well, he kind of is.
He's not carrying no names. He's carrying them. But if I'm not looking around going, like when they made the finals in 07, who's on that team? Larry Hughes, Ilgauskas. I never got the Ilgauskas thing, but LeBron loves him. You know, Eric Snow's a backup point guard. Scott Pollard's a backup center. Shannon Brown out of Michigan State. It's not a very good team. It's not a very good group. I don't know who the second best player was on the 07 Cavs. We got three or four really good candidates, probably Larry Hughes. We got three or four really good candidates for this group 8 years later. So we'll see what happens. Finals would start a week from tomorrow in Oakland, whether Golden State wins tonight or not.
Coming up, we're going to talk to Matt Cassel, who is the new quarterback, one of the new quarterbacks of the Buffalo Bills. It's a big day in the world of soccer, obviously, with all those FIFA arrests coming down. We'll get into that. And also, last night we saw something. We went to the baseball game, and I saw something when Josh Donaldson hit the walk-off home run. And you know how much I love doppelgangers.
So you do, too.
I'll show you who he reminds me of. That's coming
up. It's all coming up. It's Brady and Walker keeping you posted on White Sox-Blue Jays 2. 2-0 White Sox with two out in the top of the third inning. Jeff Samardzija, Marco Estrada still working their roles for the Blue Jays and the White Sox, respectively. 2-0 Chicago, top of the third. It's Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 360.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Back to Brady and Walker. On TV at Sportsnet 360, online at sportsnet.ca/590, and on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
More on these FIFA charges. We'll get to them in a bit, and we'll talk about the 22nd anniversary of Game 6, Kings-Leafs. Yes, that's what it's reduced to. Don't ask again. It's Brady and Walker, Greg Brady, Andrew Walker on Sportsnet 360. Very pleased to welcome in our next guest. He joins the Buffalo Bills after a couple of years in Minnesota, had some exciting years with New England and led the Kansas City Chiefs as well to a division title in his year there. Kind enough to join us during OTAs is Buffalo Bills quarterback Matt Cassel. It's great to have you on the show. How are you doing?
Hey, guys, I'm doing well. How are you?
Really good. So, you know, we also know you used to be a bit of a baseball player. We were at the game last night. Do you still follow the sport? Or are you a huge fan? Did you grow up an equal fan of baseball, of MLB and the NFL? How'd it work?
I did. I definitely was a baseball fan. I almost didn't even play football. I almost just stuck to baseball. But, you know, I'm still a fan. I don't follow it as closely as I probably should. But at the same time, I grew up a Dodgers fan. And when I was young, obviously, the Dodgers won World Series with the Kurt Gibson and all that stuff. So it was a fun time.
Now, the MLB draft works a little differently. We have you pegged at 36th round by the Oakland A's. Did someone call you? Like, it's not quite the hype of the NFL draft. Did you get a text from Billy Beane? How did that work 11 years ago? Who first told you you're a Major League Baseball draft pick? Who told you that?
You know what? It was a scout that drafted me, and they called me, and I think they offered me a bus ticket and said, "You want to come play baseball?" And I was like, I don't know about that right now. I think I'm going to, you know, figure out this football thing for one more year and then make a decision after that.
And can you still, if someone said, "Hey, I dare you, throw me an 80-mile-per-hour fastball right now, and I'll buy you dinner," could you do it? Yeah?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, I love hearing that. That's great. Sure. That's
for
great.
Sure. Let's go.
Matt Castle, our guest, Buffalo Bills quarterback. So tell us about Buffalo coming here and what you think lies ahead in terms of opportunity for you with this team.
Oh, Buffalo's been great. Obviously, the city, the people, the fan base here is absolutely amazing. So that's been really exciting to be around. And then also just the excitement with the new regime coming in with Coach Ryan and then the team and a lot of acquisitions that we made. Obviously, there's a lot of excitement right now. And then obviously for us, it's just a lot of work of getting to know everybody, getting to know your personnel, and also a brand new playbook.
Yeah, we don't know how these things work. Like Rex, you would have started against Rex the year Tom got hurt, obviously, and you guys had a good record, just fell short of making the playoffs that year. You saw him last year when you were a Viking and he was a Jet. Has there always been a relationship in the least, or do you just see him after games periodically or at off-season things?
Well, I think there's been a lot of admiration, obviously a lot of respect for what he's been able to accomplish in the NFL. And every time you go up against a Rex Ryan defense, you've got to be ready for everything. And they challenge you in so many different ways. You know, last year, obviously, I was hurt, so I didn't get a chance to play against him. But I just know throughout the course of my career, just being able to go up against the defense a few different times. I mean, like I said, I've always had a tremendous amount of respect. Now being here in Buffalo with him as the head coach, you know, it's been quite an experience, and it's been great and refreshing because he's going to tell you how it is. He's very honest, and the guys seem to love him, and I understand now why he's referred to as a player's coach, and the guys have the utmost of respect, but at the same time, he makes it for a really fun atmosphere when you go out to work every single day.
Historically for you, what type of coach do you respond to better? I mean, coaches are hired to be fired, and sometimes big personalities are great until they wear out their welcome. Rex Ryan is a big personality. Have you always gravitated towards that type of coach?
You know what? I've always been one of those players that if you're going to put me in a great position to win, then I'm all for you. And so, you know, as a player, you've got to go out and do your duties first. You have to obviously understand the offense, and I think that in the NFL, anytime you're winning and having success, it's great. Anytime you're not, you know, I've been on both ends of the spectrum. It's not as much fun. So I think that if, you know, we go out and we play well, I think everybody's going to be in good spirits and having fun.
Tell us about what your initial impressions of Sammy Watkins. He gets compared, and obviously, I think fairly so, to Randy Moss. You got to throw a lot to Randy in that one year. Are there physical similarities, just a trust factor that they can go up and both guys can, not quite the same physically. Randy's taller, but they can both go up and get balls that just other guys can't?
Right. Sammy's got a great skill set, and obviously he's a great receiver, and we watched a lot of his film from last year when he was just a rookie. And, you know, obviously to make comparisons like that, it's tough to do at this stage in his career. And he's coming off a little bit of a surgery, and he's still rehabbing and doing that stuff. But at the same time, if he can continue to develop, I think that he could, you know, become a great player in this league for a long time to come.
So you'll watch week one for you guys is against the Colts. Right now, your former teammate Tom Brady would be suspended for the Patriots-Bills game. Do you watch that situation with interest? Because it's interesting if he's not playing quarterback in those first few games, and it's interesting now if he is, if they lesser the suspension. Do you just watch that situation with interest and say whatever happens happens, or how does it work?
Yeah, you know what? I kind of do take that approach, to be honest with you, because no matter what, I don't step on the field when he's on the field, and we still have to go out and play against a really good defense, a Super Bowl defending champion. And I know from my experience being there, even when Tom, you know, went down with injury and I had to step in, that, you know, a lot of people just said that the season was over and everything else, and we went 11-5 that year. So whoever they're going to put on the field, they're going to be a competitive team because they're well coached. They know what to do and they know how to win. And so we're going to have to get prepared to beat whoever's out on that field come the second week of the season.
I thought about that because you said that. Did you take that as such an incredible personal challenge when people did say that after week one? It was an odd year, right? Favre was with the Jets. No one was quite sure how that would work. Miami had got Pennington because Favre went to the Jets, and it just clicked with Chad in Miami. They were running the wild. There were three really good teams in that division, is my recollection that year in 08.
There was, you know what, and so it came down to the wire, and we ended up going 11-5, and I think Miami went 11-5, and because of the tiebreaker, they ended up going to playoffs. But, you know, when we were playing good football, we won four straight at the end of the year, and so it's unfortunate we didn't get an opportunity to get in the playoffs, but sometimes that's how it goes. I think it was like 20 years the last time that two teams finished 11-5 and one of the teams didn't make the playoffs. So it just was one of those odd years that we had a really competitive conference, and unfortunately we were odd man out.
It's clear you have a great attitude. You still love the game. When it comes to starting, this is something you want. You're a competitive guy by nature. Do you look and say, I'd be surprised if a starter gets named? Is that sort of the concept when you got there? Was the competition's going to be close and Rex is going to pick a guy, but we're not at that stage yet. You just have to do what you can do in the summer and in the preseason, yeah?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, anytime you come into a situation where they say that there's going to be a quarterback competition, all you can control is what you can control, which is really go out each and every day, learn the offense, because we're all at the same stage right now, is learning a new offense, trying to understand Greg Roman's terminology, his philosophy, conceptually what he's seeing and how he wants to read certain route patterns, and then from there, being accountable. And then as we get closer to season, you know, you've got to step up and play well in the preseason games. And then ultimately, you know, coach has to make a decision. But for us to worry about it at this stage in the game is kind of foolish, because it takes away from your concentration of actually what you need to be doing, which is learning the offense and getting prepared to play.
Matt Castle, our guest. It was a great pleasure having you on our show today. Good luck to your Dodgers. I hope they get some money to buy, you know, maybe make a deal at the deadline. I hate seeing clubs struggle like that financially, but yeah. Good luck.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, and I'll pass that along to those Dodgers fans out there.
Thanks, Matt. Greatly appreciate it. Matt Castle, quarterback for the Buffalo Bills. It's interesting, isn't it? A lot of people love their team. A lot of people love everything about their team. And yet they are the one team in the AFC that you don't know about their quarterback, and you don't know who it's going to be, and you don't know how that person, who it is going to be, is going to play, right? Like, San Diego's got Rivers, and then there's Peyton and Brady and Roethlisberger and Dalton and the usual cast of characters.
And
you just don't know
if you have a quarterback, as much as you like to rip on a Dalton or a Tannehill, you hang on to your guys. You don't let them go. Buffalo doesn't have that guy. But we've seen a Rex Ryan team with talented different positions and a great defense go to a couple of championship games. I think Buffalo's defense is incredibly legit. I think they have some weapons up front. I think the division is in a somewhat of a state of flux.
This could be the year it turns a little bit. Yeah. So people are wondering if soccer is changing forever based on today. A bunch of guys, we got home from the ball game last night, and it was trending all over the place on Twitter because it was morning in Western Europe, and there were a bunch of FIFA executives that ended up getting arrested, and they have been charged with corruption, embezzling funds, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it's tricky to say. Everybody has known soccer has been dirty. It's just surprising. It's like, why now? You can know someone's hands in the filth a little bit. I hate saying it's a little like the Rob Ford thing. It's like, when's the day going to come? And then you're still kind of surprised. It's still shocking news.
Right.
Oh, my God. He admitted he smoked crack cocaine. Oh, my God. He's getting accused of this. And it's still surprising, even though it's sort of all whispered and under the surface. Do you have I know you're not the biggest soccer fan, but do you look at this and say, I have observations, I'm curious? This is like a bunch of NHL executives showing up somewhere and they all get arrested. Basically.
I mean, yeah, I don't think anyone's blown away by this. I think you're surprised that, like you said, today's the day. Why is today the day? I'm intrigued to see where it goes from here. You know what intrigues me the most? And I'll get your thought on it. It's the whole
because it's not the World Cup stuff. It's the marketing. It's the advertising dollars. I mean, who are we talking about? Like, what's going to come out, right? If the FBI says this is just the beginning, are we talking about Adidas? Are we talking about Nike?
Yeah.
What happens to Coca-Cola and Visa and Carlsberg or whoever is these? Because soccer is getting only more lucrative, right? It's not getting less lucrative.
No,
that's the way it feels.
It feels like it's slanting to a younger market. I still have great skepticism about what the MLS can become. And I do think, like a lot of things, like UFC, maybe even like golf, right? It can hit its peak in a certain era. The Tiger era was kind of, to me, the peak of golf. I do wonder where it goes. The biggest tangible thing is, could they finally decide, because everyone remembers, everyone in the soccer community remembers it 5 years ago when they gave the 2022 World Cup to Qatar and the USA were bidding and countries in Europe were bidding. And it's like, wait a minute, it's 45 degrees in the desert. There's no history. There's no team. There's no nothing. This smells a little fishy. And it's smelled fishy for 5 years. People are dying there. They're basically using slave labor to get these stadiums built. Now they're talking about playing it in December in the middle of the NFL and NHL and NBA season. It won't be the same. I just wonder if eventually you get a scenario where they move the World Cup and they say that we just can't. I don't care how far they pushed this in Qatar. It was done illegally. We can't do it. And that never happens. You'd never see an Olympics get taken away from somebody.
Right.
There's always rumors. Oh, we're way behind in construction. No matter how done it is, the Olympics stay where they get given.
I'll read you a statement from top-tier FIFA sponsor McDonald's. So McDonald's is weighing in on soccer now. McDonald's takes matters of ethics and corruption very seriously, and the news from the U.S. Department of Justice is extremely concerning. We're in contact with FIFA on this matter. We will continue to monitor the situation very closely.
Positive.
So there you go.
Very positive. All right, let's do best and worst from last night in sports.
Best,
Josh Donaldson.
And worst,
Josh Georges.
With Brady and Walker.
Interesting. That's just where Josh Georges.
Hey, I want to go play for 30th place Buffalo.
That's just what he wanted, yeah.
That's what he wanted. All right, best player, worst player, best win, worst loss, worst player. Well, you know, he's not a player. We got to give it to our colleague, Barry Davis. I don't know if you saw last night. You know, we were at the game last night, the Jays game. And we didn't really even see this. We were sitting first base side. This happened third base side. So Josh Toley hits a pop-up. Barry Davis is sitting there. He has a glove on for some reason. And he doesn't make the catch.
First of all.
Called chair interference. Oh, how so mortifying.
Is it possible that, and he throws the glove, which is not, again, not sportsmanlike in the least. Like, do you think he should have moved his feet more?
Well,
he didn't camp under it exactly.
No,
he
did have a chair there, I guess. He did have a chair, but he got a little lazy.
Does he make that catch of the? Is it like an R.A. Dickey thing? Does he make the catch of the domes closed? Is he better with the dome closed in catching balls?
I don't know.
With a glove like that,
he didn't really look like a ball player though. There,
no, he didn't.
So, yeah.
Best player. I'll flip to best player because we're going to do best win in a little bit. Best player. Can you guys put it up on the screen? Because I haven't got it in front of me right now. I know I picked the Tigers for best win for a reason. Yeah, this is why. Matt Garza. That's why I forgot.
Oh.
Matt Garza now.
So you did a worst, two worst players.
The big free.
Everyone was. We'll give best player to Donaldson. How about that?
Yeah, the big free agent guy, Matt Garza, falls to 2-7. Now, 2 years ago with the Milwaukee Brewers, right? He was an ace in Tampa. Basically their best pitcher. Maybe James Shields was in 2009 when they made the World Series. But we are tracking the concept that a major league pitcher could lose 20 games. He's got seven, and we've still got 5 days left in May. I'm not going to give up. If he can log 12, a dozen losses up by the end of June, we're in great shape.
San Diego Padres' Andrew Cashner goes for his eighth loss today, but his ERA is pretty good. He's going to turn it around. All right, worst loss, I'll give it to the Tampa Bay Lightning. We talked about it off the top. It did feel, who knows, right? Maybe you're way off base here. It did feel like that was Tampa's chance to close this out. Because New York historically gets the job done in Game 7 on home ice. But as soon as this game got to 3-1 in the third, it was just lights out. It was all Rangers in the third.
Best win, Tigers beat the A's in a pitching duel. David Price got the win, but Anthony Gost was excellent in a 2-for-4 stolen base, scored the only run. He's still getting on all the time, still hitting well. It's a trade that's worked out for both teams. Yeah. Coming up, 22 years ago, was it the most memorable moment, good or bad, since the Leafs won the Cup in 67? We'll ask Leaf fans next. It's Brady and Walker on SportsNet 360.